You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Thanks for choosing this free Anfield Index podcast. If you'd prefer to listen to this or any of our other shows without adverts, then now's the time to check out Anfield Index Pro. With AI Pro, you can supercharge your entire listening experience. You'll not only get all of our podcasts without the ads, but you'll have them far faster with our quick publish feature available exclusively for subscribers. AI Pro also puts you in the heart of our sound studio, with an option to listen to many of our shows live and interact with the podcasters in real time as the shows are recording. Upgrading couldn't be easier. AI Pro is available on all popular podcast platforms, and we have our own apps for Apple and Android. Just head on over to AnfieldIndexPro.com and get started today.
Hello and welcome to AI Scouted on Anfield Index Pro. I'm Dave Hendrick, joined as always by Mr. Carol Matchett. How are you, sir?
Dismal. How are you?
Absolutely furious. Absolutely fucking livid. Still. Carl Matchett, last night we played Atalanta, who are an average team in poor form. Lost 3-0. And really and truly, it should have been 5 or 6. Now, I know we had a couple of decent chances in the game. Well, we really had one decent chance that Darwin skewed wide and we had a goal disallowed. Other than that, we had half chances. But they scored 3 and missed 2, if not 3, other huge chances. And I kind of wish they'd gone in, because if it was 5, I feel like even the sadomasochist that is Jurgen Klopp would realize there's no point in going to Atalanta with anything other than an under-21 team. But at 3-0, my fear now is that he goes full strength against Atalanta and jeopardizes the league game that we have 3 days later against Fulham.
Yeah, while I share those potential concerns, my more immediate, bigger concern is that that is now 3 bad results in 5, 2 bad performances in a row, and a game at the weekend that if you don't win and probably produce a bit of a decent performance in, none of the rest of the season will matter an awful lot. We've spoken before that we do not have scope to drop any points at home whatsoever. That was always likely to be the case across the course of the season, but now coming into the final straight and mostly having won home games, obviously that's even more so now. So you have to win the last 3 home games and no questions asked, and yet we've just put in our worst one of the season on home soil before that. Not too many tremendous Anfield performances of late, I would say, certainly not 90-minute ones. Big result and lots of goals at times, but I don't always think that we've been scintillating, let's say. I think Palace is very suddenly not just an important game in terms of the title race, but in terms of getting ourselves back on track in the season as a whole. It's been not a good little run that we've had at a particularly dismal time for it.
Yeah, I think it's 3 wins in the last 7 games, no clean sheets in the last 8 games. The wins have come against Sparta Prague, who, you know, many levels below us. Sheffield United, one of the worst Premier League teams ever. and Brighton, who are not in good form. That's where we are right now. We're really struggling. And this weekend, it's fortunate in its timing in that Crystal Palace are not particularly good at the moment. No wins in their last five games. Their away form over their last six games is the worst in the league, with two draws, four defeats, only four goals scored, and 15 conceded. They also have a raft of injuries. Sam Johnston's out for the season. Cheick Doucouré's out for the season. Mark Guehi, Chris Richards, Matthias Franke, they're all out, as are Rob Holding and Jesserun Rakszaki, who'd not be starting but would be squad players for them. So this is a game we really do have to win. But I want to stick with last night for a minute, Carl. What do you think went wrong?
Everything. Everything, everything, everything. Honestly, that's the easiest answer to give. We were all over the place. We had no defensive structure. The shape was terrible. The players who came in, individually, I don't have a big issue with them coming in, but I think they were grouped poorly in terms of they all had to rely on each other a little bit and they hadn't played. Like Jones and Kostas coming in down the left-hand side means that's one entire channel, basically, with Cody ahead of them on the left, which was a surprise. I was quite pleased to see Cody left side, actually, because we spoke about that before the game, but I didn't think it would happen. But then when you've got Tsimikas, Jones and Gakpo as your left-hand side, and none of them have been starter matches, two have been injured for ages, there's no rhythm there. There's obviously no tremendous first touch there. The timing, there's not going to be an understanding between the three of them, because it's, you know, even if they had been starting some matches, it's not a combination which we would see regularly. But even like other ones, like Konate, I thought was dreadful last night. We've mentioned it before, and I think I might have said it before the Atalanta game as well. Like, he needs a game to get back in after, you know, a little bit of an injury sometimes, and that's fine. That's quite normal. But he was particularly poor last night, I thought. Decision making was bad.
He was full Sacco last night.
Sorry?
He was like full. Remember when Mamadou Sakho used to come back from an injury?
Yeah.
And he would throw in the worst performance you've ever seen.
Yeah.
That's what Konate did last night. Like, that's easily his worst performance in a Liverpool shirt.
Certainly for some time. But like it was throughout, to be honest. Like, the pressing was sporadic and not really done with groups of people at all. I thought Harvey Elliott was pretty hard done by to go off at halftime, to be honest. Maybe a case of needs must that you want Salah on the pitch, but I thought maybe he could have moved back into midfield. I thought him and maybe Gakpo were two of the outfield performers who actually did all right, but like, everything was wrong. Like, communication was wrong. The passing was really sloppy. The tempo of our play, oh my God. Like, you could have just not watched the screen for 2 minutes at a time and not missed anything. It was so, so slow. Their game plan, obviously, with the man-to-man marking, revolved around moving very, very high up the pitch out of their own, let's say, base positions and not being bothered about that at all. And why would they be? Because there was no running off the ball. So, you know, any time that the centre-back stepped all the way into midfield or even further on the times that Gakpo or Darwin dropped deep or pulled wide or whatever, nobody made the run diagonally to go into that space. So there was no real out ball for us. They were perfectly happy for it to be at the feet of Cuive, who I think did all right. Like, obviously, longer passes, less likelihood of accuracy, and maybe a few of them could have been better. But again, no options. Nobody was moving for him. Nobody was, you know, making a surprise run or trying extra hard to make the space. It was very, very predictable from us. Kelleher obviously made, I think, three really good stoppages, but then the first goal he would have been probably a bit disappointed with. Overall, I would say he was among our top maybe four performers, even though
really?
He conceded a goal. Yeah.
I think he was at fault for all three goals, Carol.
All three?
The first one's a pathetic attempt to save.
The first one is a misjudgment.
The second one comes from a horrendous pass to Gomez.
That's
where it all starts. It all starts with that. We have the ball, no pressure. He puts it out of play under no pressure.
Yeah, it is under no
And I'm
pressure.
Sorry, the but the third one, how's he not holding that? Like, Ederson rolls it at him from 5 yards, rolls it at him, and he scoops it out to Pasalic. I'm sorry, he wasn't good. He wasn't good. He made he made two good saves, one of which was the 1v1 from Poop Miners, and the other one hit him in the face.
Mm. He still put himself there. That's still a brilliant
it's
save.
It's a bad miss. It's a bad miss. It's it hit him really in the face. Save.
He threw himself
after he had a time dreadful entirely. Game.
He didn't have a dreadful game. And his even kicking if he had a was atrocious. Game, he was still
all he did was pump
players.
It. That's how all he did was pump it long. Every time he tried to play short, he either played someone into trouble or he put it out of play. He pumped it long and gave the ball away the entire first half. Now, that's not his fault. That's coming from the touchline. It's not the first time we've seen that happen, where all we do routinely is pump it long, because we had absolutely no tactical plan last night.
I don't even think it was about a tactical plan. I think it was about the lack of movement. I genuinely, there was just nothing there at all. The only person for the first, I'd say about half an hour, who was making any kind of inroad into movement with the ball was Cody Gakpo. Like, nobody else at all. There was nobody moving out of shape, nobody making sort of diagonal runs, nobody running ahead of the ball, nothing at all other than when Gakpo got the ball on the turn. And he made a few, those forceful kind of dribbles where he takes on two or three at once.
And then gave the ball away.
Yeah, there was nothing at the end of it because there was no movement at the end of it.
That's the thing. There was no movement. Like, there's no explosiveness in that team. Curtis is not explosive. Alexis is not explosive. Endo certainly isn't explosive. Cody's not explosive. Cody needs 3-4 yards to get moving properly. If he can take the ball on the turn and hold a man off while he gets going, that's fair enough. But he can't run away from anybody if they're squared up on him. And Harvey, again, just doesn't have that explosiveness. The only person that was making any kind of run in behind was Nunes. And we know that 50% of those runs are going to be offside. And the other 50%, you're then looking for the support on who's making the next run. And there was nobody making that second run. But what got me last night, Carl, was we had our first choice centre-backs and we had a midfield that a lot of people have been clamouring for in Curtis, Endo and Alexis, including us. We've been saying we want to see a bit more of that midfield because they started against Burnley together and looked really good in the 4-1. But, or 3-1 maybe. But last night, they were unable to find any real control in that game. And Atalanta, in a way, played into our hands by going man-to-man. But we didn't take advantage of it at all. Like, they were leaving big spaces for us because their players were being so aggressive in their man-to-man marking. And we did nothing with that. Ederson monstered our midfield. Coop Miners and De Ketelier had all the space in the world. Them sitting behind our midfield, in front of our attack, meant that every time they turned the ball over, they were running at our back too, with three players at least. And everyone else was running towards our goal except Virgil and Ibu. So all the support defenders were coming back, but all of their attackers were coming forward as well. All of the wing backs were getting forward, and they just seemed to want it a lot more. Like, Costa Simicus on two different occasions down our left hand side, their right hand side, was caught out of position, and Zaba Costa outsprinted him to get forward while he's dawdling back. Now, again, it's not on Costas because he was playing really well pre-injury, got injured, and hasn't really had a sniff ever since. So like you said at the start, he changed the entire left side, and he changed pretty much the entire right side as well, because Alexis played right side rather than left side. And he brings in Gomez, he brings in Harvey. Like, that's really, really hard to make work when you make that many changes. And individually, I didn't mind the changes. It's just the collective sum of them. just, it was too much. And it was disrespectful to Atalanta. And it looked like we talked about them on The Last Scouted. Like, if you've watched them at all this season, they have gone a little bit stale because they're doing the same stuff they've been doing under Gasperini for years. But it's like we had no idea what they were going to do. Like, did we not prepare for the game at all?
I don't need a VPN. I've got nothing to hide. This is what I used to tell myself before I hooked up with LibertyShield.com. Not only is my home internet now fully encrypted, but I can now access all the websites I want, whenever I want, and do so from absolutely anywhere. As a Liverpool fan, I love to know I can now watch every match, regardless of whether it's on UK TV or not. My Liberty Shield VPN makes sure nothing is blocked and guarantees me super fast streaming speed throughout that match. You can get connected right now with their software package, which includes a 48-hour no-obligation free trial and instant access to their apps for Apple, Android, Fire TV, PC, Mac, and Android TV. Or go a step further like I have and get one of their pre-configured VPN routers. These small but powerful devices allow you to easily connect every device in your home to VPN, making it the perfect solution for smart TVs, Mac boxes, and games consoles. Visit LibertyShield.com today and use coupon code AIVPN25 to get 25% off at checkout.
I mean, I just think that it was so much of what they did was negatable, if we can use that as a term, if we had speed of play. Honestly, that's literally as much as we would have needed. Like, we did a couple of times where, let's say, McAllister, for example, came short instead of Endo from a goal kick, and the pass goes into his feet, and Gomez just makes a five-yard dart past his man, and it's a first-time ball around the corner from McAllister out to Gomez. Suddenly, you're past the first press there, and if he makes the first, like, decent touch and move into space, he's left three of them behind him already, and the one who followed McAllister is out of position. But from that point onwards, you've got two things which need to happen. Somebody, header Gomez, needs to make the run into space to receive the ball, and the next person needs to already be moving off them so that they can play a first-time ball or, you know, whatever it is. And secondly, Gomez needs to make that pass correctly. But neither of those two things hardly ever happened last night. And so it's a quick reset for them. It's an easy reset for them because then we're going backwards again, or we're going sideways, or someone's got to turn back away from, there's nobody to pass to first time. There's no wall pass opportunities for Gomez to make a continue his run for. It was just, oh, it was tiresome to watch the amount of times we didn't do something which was fine from a technical perspective, is a difficult thing to do, but we're talking about some of the best players in the world, or supposedly so. And it should be a natural instinct for them to do and a doable thing for them to do three times out of six, seven, eight, nine, ten, whatever it is. But we didn't even do it, is the problem. We didn't attempt to do it to allow ourselves to make those movements. It was just.
And see, like, we could have been doing the same thing on the other side as well, having Curtis drop in to take the ball short and then have Costas make that same kind of run you're talking about for Gomez. But we never tried that either. Like, we tried it with the Gomez side. Joe Gomez has been brilliant this year. Like, absolutely brilliant. We are not where we are right now without Joe Gomez. And by that, I mean level and points with Arsenal in the Premier League. He has been tremendous this year. And last night, he was absolutely atrocious. And I'm telling you, Carl, if I catch any of the people who stand on the cop and shout at him to shoot anytime he's within 30 yards, I'm not going to be held responsible, because the guy can't shoot. Stop shouting at him to shoot.
You notice that the last one last night, nobody said it at all.
Nobody said shoot.
And still shot. And then they start moaning.
Yeah. And Jurgen went absolutely bananas at him. That was Joe Gomez having a Dejan Lovren moment to cap off a bit of a Dejan Lovren performance from him, because he was garbage throughout. And also should have done better on the first goal, should have been closer to Scamacca, should have been in position on the second goal, because Virgil steps across, Ebu steps across as the right back. It is now your job to step across. You're now the right side centre back if Virgil's playing left back and Ebu's left side centre back. And instead he's dawdling. And the same on the third goal, half-arsed attempt to get back. Like, very Lovren of him. And the shot just capped the whole thing. Where he thought he was going to put that, I've no idea. Because, like, Joe, I love you, but you can't shoot. You just can't. You're not the type of fella that has a sighter early in the game and then has it all dialed in for the second one. Believe me, you could score from 40 yards and at the next shot I would still believe is hitting the corner flag rather than working the goalkeeper. Nobody comes out of last night with any credit. The other issue, you mentioned that with Gomez. Like, there was once or twice where it did work, where the ball went to Alexis, quick pass to Gomez, and Gomez drives into midfield. But the problem is, Cody's natural instinct is to come short for the ball. And because we've played Harvey in midfield so often, his natural instinct now is to come short for the ball. So there's no movement in behind. And by playing that short pass, you're slowing the attack down, letting them get their numbers back behind the ball. And all of a sudden, what might have been a little bit of a transition opportunity turns into you against their set defense. And on two different occasions in the first half last night, we had counterattacking opportunities that didn't get within 40 yards of their goal and ended up with opportunities for them going the other way because one of those two wingers was dropping in so deep to receive a pass from Gomez, then turning and losing the ball straight away, and Atalanta were just running off in the other direction. Really, really, really frustrating. Do you think this tie is salvageable? Do you think Jurgen should go with a strong team in Bergamo? Or do you think it's just time to wave the white flag and focus on the league?
I wouldn't be deciding anything at all until after the Palace game, and it would depend everything on how we do in that.
That's fair.
I don't think it's absolutely unsalvageable, especially if we were to score early over there. But, I mean, it's very improbable, and I don't think our away form has been sensational enough to suggest we will go there. Like, since the Arsenal defeat, like, we hammered Brentford, we just about beat Forest. Sparta doesn't count. We lost to United. We didn't beat United again. It's not been great, has it? Let's be honest. It would need one of our best performances of the season, just like they had one of their best performances of the season. And I don't see us scoring four, so we would need a clean sheet.
Yeah.
But in terms of the lineup, nothing. I wouldn't pick anything at all until I see the reaction and how we perform against Palace.
So this season, we have scored four away from home three times. Once against Sparta, which doesn't count because they're multiple levels below. Once against Brentford in a 4-1. And once against Bournemouth. And that's it. Like, we haven't won by three clear goals in any other away game this year. So there is no reason to think we can go there and do it.
They also haven't conceded three in a game at home this season.
No, that's the thing. Like, their home form has been quite good at home. Their home form has been quite good this season. Like, you look at the results.
Bologna, Napoli, Inter, and AC are the only sides to score twice on their home games. And obviously, three of those four are in the top four. And
nobody's beaten them at home by more than one goal.
Yeah.
The only time they've actually conceded three without scoring, Torino away in December in what was a poor run. And then Inter beat them 4-0 at the San Siro. And that's it.
And they've only failed to score at home once this season. That was a 0-0 with Juve. So yeah. Numbers don't stack up in our favour. But I think the best possible route to victory Liverpool have is that you and I have been absolutely awful at predicting the scoreline in Liverpool versus Atalanta games. So let's roll with that.
The other factor is that all of our players are seemingly out of form at the same time.
Yeah.
Right, Crystal Palace this weekend. Palace are having, well, quite a Palace-y season. They're currently 14th in the league. They finished 11th last year. Last year, they sacked Patrick Vieira and brought back Roy. They decided to keep Roy for this season. He lasted till the 19th of February. And then there was a very, very weird weekend where he was taken ill on the Friday amid very strong rumours that he was about to be sacked. Oliver Glasner, it was leaked by a spoofer with a catchphrase who's available for sale to anyone with money that wants to promote a player, club or anything else, that Oliver Glasner had signed a contract to become the new Palace manager while Roy was still in hospital, which was really in bad taste by everybody involved. Roy resigns or steps down or whatever way they framed it. Glasner takes over. And results have been kind of the same as they were beforehand. They've won one since he took over. That was home to Burnley. They've drawn three with Everton, Luton and Nottingham Forest, and they've lost to Spurs, Bournemouth and Manchester City. So basically, anybody halfway decent has beaten them, and they've either drawn or beaten the bad teams. But they've only won three games since the 4th of November when they beat Burnley away. They've only won four, including that Burnley game, since September. So two wins over Burnley, a win over Brentford, and a win over Sheffield United, all of whom are crap. This is not a good team, Carol. And they've been absolutely decimated by injuries to their most important players. Michael Olise has missed most of the season. Ebre Chiesa has had multiple injuries. Mark Guehi's had multiple injuries and is out now for, you know, prolonged period. And Cheick Doucouré got injured earlier in the season and it's a torn Achilles. He might never be the same player again. Like, it's been a very, very tough road for them. When your four best players are all missing significant chunks, and Guehi's only missed five so far, or six so far, I think it is. Doucouré's missed 19 of your games thus far. Olise's missed 20. And Eze has missed 11. Like, that's really tough when you're Crystal Palace to lose those four players for that type of gap.
Yeah, I mean, that's a very, very tough run. They're all like quite central players as well to the system, as well as the quality level that they have. They've also had, by choice or not, chopping and changing in goal, which is not the easiest thing to do and go through. Henderson's been in goal for the last few. Obviously, it was Sam Johnston before that. Then he picked
Henderson up before that, and Sam Johnston before that.
That's
an odd one, though, isn't it? Like, they had Sam Johnston. They went and spent big money on Dean Henderson, who, like, I think he's a good goalkeeper. I don't know. Is he much better than Sam Johnston? Was it a worthwhile move?
I mean,
to even bring him in now they need him because Johnston's injured, but it just didn't seem like it should have been a priority this season when you were going into a year with Joel Ward and Nathaniel Clyne as your right backs. It felt like that money could have been spent at right back maybe rather than on another goalkeeper when you already had, you know, a fringe England goalkeeper in Sam Johnston.
Hmm. I mean, I guess if you think that he's going to be a big upgrade across the course of the season, then maybe... Sorry, I mean, not across the course of the season, but during the course of the season, he'll get to the point where he would be recognised as an upgrade, and then you have him for like 4 years after that. Then maybe you think that 15 million And, you know, I think it rises to 20 overall. But anyway, that's maybe a lot lower than you would expect to be able to sign a keeper for, you know, who's potentially England number one and so on. And maybe as a Crystal Palace, you wouldn't have the choice to do that most of the time anyway. So maybe it was opportunistic and sort of slightly forward-looking from them. I'm surprised Henderson was unable to solidify that first choice status across the season, but you know, maybe you take a bit of a longer view. He's been in and out. He hasn't really been able to settle at a club for quite a long time, obviously with the loans and everything. So I don't know. A little bit you understand it, and a little bit, like you say, there were definite areas which needed the expenditure rather than a second goalkeeper. But I guess it may work out well for them. Like you say, they've had to dovetail them across the campaign anyway. They've both played a pretty significant number of minutes. Johnson's on just about 1,800 Premier League minutes, and Dean Henderson is approaching 1,000 now when he plays against us. So, all told, you need those two goalkeepers, I guess, same as we've seen this season.
And like Henderson, like he's younger as well. So even if they're about even, he is younger.
Yeah.
He's been very unfortunate. Obviously, he missed a huge chunk of last season with an injury. Remember, he broke his finger or something and didn't heal, and he had to have two surgeries on it. And then he got injured very early in his Palace, or maybe on his debut, he got injured this year as well. So, like, he has been unfortunate, and that feeds into the bad luck that they've had with injuries. And now, obviously, Johnston comes back in under the new manager, is playing quite well. He gets injured and is done for the year. Like, you do feel for a club like Palace when, like I said, they've got some very, very good players, but again, they've got Joel Ward and Nathaniel Clyne as their right backs. That's kind of telling of the quality that they have throughout after those bigger players. And when you lose important players for large chunks, like it is just going to be a real slog of a season.
It is, yeah. I mean, I think that they've probably taken steps to rectify the keeping of the Hodgson, let's say. Maybe recognize that they shouldn't have done that last season. Now they've got a third maybe of this campaign to sort of just put a few building blocks in place for Glasner, and then in the summer it has to be maybe not overhaul of the squad, but certainly the mentality, the style that he'll want to impart and so on. From his games, I've not seen all of the games obviously of Glasner, but I saw the Forest game, I saw the Man City game, and a little bit of maybe the Bournemouth defeat, can't remember now, one of them anyway recently, which obviously he's changed the system to set up how he wants to, the formation, the base formation, but I don't think that there's been a massive change in approach of build-up play yet. I would maybe have expected a little bit more progress on that side, but to de-hodgify something, as we know only too well, does take a little bit of time, so kind of give him a bit of leeway there.
That's a power washing to get that stink off the place.
Yeah, they need to bring in a catcher as well as a Glasner, I think. So. There's also, I've got to say, they're not quite there yet in where he wants everyone to be. Like, he started off obviously bringing in Chris Richards back into the team to play as one of the third centre backs, and potentially that's not a bad way to go. I think we've spoken about him before. He had a little run in defensive midfield at one point, and then he had a little spell where he was trying to play centre back. Now he's injured again. Like, it's really difficult to get that kind of momentum going with him at the minute. Does not get any kind of run of game. So now they're ending up with Jefferson Lerma at centre-back for the last couple of games, which...
Not ideal.
It's not ideal. One, it's not ideal for him and his best role, but also I don't think positionally he's necessarily that kind of player. He's much more of a move out of line and be the stopper than someone who's going to be holding position and, you know, keeping a line tight and so on. So you've got Anderson who's in the middle, and that's fine. But then Ward and Lerma either side, you wouldn't have either if you had the choice. If you have Richards and Gehi, then two-thirds of that is pretty decent. Rob Holding as another actual centre-back option is also not available to them. So it's been quite a tough start. I don't mind Adam Wharton, who's come into midfield recently.
Looks good, doesn't he?
He does look quite a handy player. And I think, I might be wrong there, but I think he was just starting to get a bit of a run under Hodgson as well. Did he come back off loan, was it, earlier in the season? And he just started to break into the team. He's only played like 9 games now, so it's nice.
Brought him in from Blackburn.
Was it a signing?
Yeah, signing in January. Him and Muniz were the signings in January.
okay.
But again, with him, you probably want a Lerma next to him in midfield, that kind of more physical presence. But because Lerma is needed at centre back, because two of the three starting centre backs are missing, you're also, your midfield is weakened as well by taking that ball winner out. And, you know, like Will Hughes is he's a decent footballer, but him and Wharton is not the type of partnership you'd ideally want. So that's another line that's been messed up because of the injuries. I have been impressed by Wharton. I've been impressed by Muniz since he arrived from Genk. I think he's been a big upgrade on Klein and Ward. But as I said, like, Ward is having to play the right side centre back role. Lerma's the left side centre back. Neither of them are centre backs by nature. Both of them are quite aggressive in terms of going to meet the ball and not holding position, because fullbacks are trained to be aggressive, to go and meet the runner. And Lerma's, he's not a sitting midfielder. He's that type that roams around and tries to disrupt play and break things up and get the team going in the opposite direction. So when you put the two of them at centre back, like, it can just be a bit chaotic back there for them. And Joachim Andersen is a good defender without question, but he's not the quickest in the world. So when one of the others abandons ship to go and try and chase a ball or press into midfield, he's having to cover a lot of ground, which really does expose him in big spaces. Like, I like what Glasner's trying to do in terms of the shape. And I think it makes sense to get it in now, get the team used to it so that you buy in the summer for this shape. You have your whole preseason with this shape and the players just get adapted to it. But it is being hugely disrupted on him by the injuries. And, like, I feel for Chris Richards. I mean, last season, a ton of injuries, finally gets himself fit, gets a manager that wants to play a back three. So he's not just the third centre-back sat on the bench. He's starting alongside the top two. And then he gets injured again. Like, it's just been a really unfortunate run for him.
Hey guys, it's Eddie Gibbs from Anfield Index here. I hope you're enjoying this podcast, and I'm sorry to call time on the show before it ends. In the current climate, it's tougher than ever before to offer podcasts for free. At Anfield Index, we produce over 75 free shows every month, which I'm confident is unparalleled in the LFC sphere. Whilst we'd love to offer everything for free, the production costs now make this impossible. That said, we don't want to follow the model of other channels and lock all of our content behind a paywall. So what we've decided to do is to continue offering every show for free, but cut that offering to 30 minutes on our longer shows. So to get all of our shows in full and enjoy the best of everything we have to offer, we really hope you'll consider supporting the channel and signing up at AnfieldIndexPro.com. For about the price of one cup of coffee, you'll get every podcast in full with zero ads. You'll also get access to our LFC VIP community, where you can enjoy live podcasts, engage with our podcasters, and chat with other Reds in real time. So that website again, AnfieldIndexPro.com. Join today.
Sports Social Podcast Network.